Guaranteed not to be called a catch. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Happy new podcast year to everyone on this show whose team is still in the NFL playoffs.
Isn't it good for two of us here on Motorsport 101 right now? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to M101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And welcome to a pair of bonus podcasts over the next week or so. As we've now traditionally done on this podcast network for the last, I think, 3 or 4 years now, we're going to do a preview and review of the IMSA Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona, which, of course, is this weekend, Daytona International Speedway. And, joining me is what I like to call Christmas 2 for our fellow sports car fans. First of all, Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, sir.
Hello, everyone.
Drake May.
And more importantly, Kayshawn Booty.
Grab the booty at all times. Booty was wide open. You gotta love it.
Euphemisms are starting early.
Absolutely, and they will be vast and plentiful, just like booty. Speaking of which, potential playoff disasters. Hello from Daytona, Mr. RJ O'Connell. How's it going over there?
MC O'Connell the Clown. He's exquisitely funny and he'll cure all that ails you. And I said, Doctor, that's a great idea. Honk, honk.
Oh. I'm sorry, brother. That is the death. Even as a rival New England fan compared to your Buffalo Bills, even I've got to say that's a bad beat.
That's a really bad beat. Like many of us, we don't know what a catch or interception is anymore. A shot at Durbin probably run its course? Probably. Is he the right guy you want to fire in that situation? Don't know. Am I hopeful for what the future brings for my NFL football team that I love? I don't know, man. I don't even want to think about it. You know what the best thing about this is, though? Is that it frees me from having to worry about this shit during the actual Rolex 24, because
true,
the last few years, we get to the championship game, right, I've got to get through all my deadline stuff, and then I have to worry about playing Kansas City. So, yes, this sucks for my sports
You
game,
never had that problem this year. None of us had that problem this year.
This is great for my mental health at the day job. And I simply look forward to the rematch of the intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler on Real Bowl in a couple weeks' time.
Look, I need to see a body. That Denver defense is something else. We're not
playing
facing
Jarrett Stidham. Bo Nix broke his ankle after getting the biggest win of his career.
He is kind of correct. It is amazing watching two teams get eliminated in the same game from the playoffs.
I did not imagine Peyton Manning's noodle arm winning a Super Bowl the last time for the Denver Broncos on the back of an all-time great defense. I need to see a body.
Jarrett Stidham has not thrown an NFL pass in the last 2 seasons, my man.
Yeah, we would know. He's a former Patriot. We have the footage. It wasn't great.
It ain't great.
As you said on this one many times.
Garbage in AK.
If you said on our show, on outside of our show on our Discord many a times, RJ, you'll tell you the ingredients of the hot dog, you might not like it. It's
no, that's a Mike Tomlin quote. Congratulations on a great career in Pittsburgh. Shame how it ended, but you're gonna love television.
As someone who doesn't get to see an awful lot of black coaches in the NFL, a salute to Mike Tomlin. He pretty much changed the NFL forever. To get 19 years in any franchise is a remarkable achievement. He is walking proof that the Rooney Rule is important, and it's there for a very good reason. I do remember the fact that Miami once upon a time said that Mike Tomlin was too hip-hop to coach the Miami Dolphins. They went with some guy called Cam, no relation, instead, and the Dolphins went 1-15 that year. Just saying. That's enough football for this week. We'll pick this up off the AFC Championship.
101 will return in a future episode, but as Dre alluded to, this is our Rolex 24 Daytona preview. We're going to talk briefly about all the classes, some a little more brief than others, because this is four races for the price of one for 24 straight hours. This Saturday and Sunday, January 24th through the 25th.
Exactly. And we will cover LMP2, GTD, GTD Pro, and all the manufacturers in the big GTP class, the main event of this incredible, shall we say, double weekend of racing. Oh, and fun fact before, because we haven't really got time to talk about it too much apart from now, the biggest Mazda MX-5 Cup race of all time. 46 cars at Daytona. Oh dear God!
We brought a bigger beehive,
the biggest of them all. It's
watch this. You never know if the next Connor Zilich might be hiding, lurking in this field of bees.
And trust me, we will get to talk about Connor Zilich. We will get to talk about a lot of the global all stars and the unofficial race of champions in lieu of the old race of champions or the international race of champions, which are no longer things as we know them.
Yeah, we're not riding in the middle of some snow in some buggies with Sebastian Vettel anymore. It makes me happy and sad at the same time. Right, general housekeeping before we get into it here. Places you can find us real quick. We're on YouTube.com. You can hear me swear at my co-hosts over the award show from last week on there, on Instagram, thank or at Motorsport101Pod, or on TikTok at M101_podcast, you fucking bastards. We're also on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. Anyone follow us personally on Blue Sky, you can at Dre Harrison, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917, not BSky.social. Our website is motorsport101.com for all of our written stuff, including there'll be a new Ask Dre out in the next couple of days or so. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to get Discord access. And the ability to listen to these shows live as they're being recorded, as Kira and Rory are doing so right now. Thanks, guys, for joining us as ever.
Rory, you are killing it on Instagram. You're getting all the love by making these really fun sports car racing memes. You got dapped up by Connor Zilich, man. It's great.
You got dapped up by Connor Zilich, and IMSA itself has followed him over this weekend. I don't normally plug other people on this show too often, but Rory Talks Motorsport is a very good friend of ours. He's a longtime fan. And he does very funny memes, mostly on sports car racing, but dabbles in the odd F1 stuff here and there as well. He's an annoyingly funny bloke and well worth a follow on Instagram at Rory.
He can sing too. He's been promoted from other Rory to Irish Rory to Instagram Rory, because I don't remember to use that shit.
He could sing too, says Ed in the comments, which I'm not sure if that's the endorsement he wants, but we'll go from there. Also, big thanks to Lulu, our latest Patreon backer as well. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Yeah. We do love all our Patreon backers very much. Thank you so much for your continued support as per ever. Right after this quick musical interlude. It's IMSA, and we're going to preview the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona right after this.
Sixty cars in total. The first class we'll start with is LMP2. I wanted to do this in order of ascending professionalism because, contrary to what people will say about GTD, it is only nominally a pro-am category. LMP2 is the only one where you have to run a bronze driver. You also have to have one silver and one gold rated driver by the FIA driver categorization system. There are 13 Orica 07 LMP2s in the field this year. And to sum up what happened last year in LMP2, utter chaos. So many wrecks, so much mechanical attrition, particularly in the last few hours. And we had a Tower Motorsport car that seemingly won the race, having dodged the biggest wreck of the race, only to fail tech and hand the win to United Autosports, their first Rolex 24 at Daytona win. It's a lineup that is full with colorful cars, although a lot of people chose black and orange, and a lot of faces, Dre, that if you were a regular listener to the show, but maybe doesn't dabble in IMSA, doesn't dabble in Wector, more of a casual follower, you recognize some names, you'll recognize a lot of these names in the 13 yes. LMP2 cars we got.
I'll give you a good rundown of some of them here as well, from pretty much everything we've ever covered on Motorsport 101 in some way or another. A fleet of IndyCar, past and present. Ben Hanley in the number two for United Auto Sports. We've got Toby Sowery, who did a very solid job filling in over at DCR last year in their fleet of drivers that they had in their team last year. So much so, they forced a rule change. But Toby was pretty damn solid over there. Jacob Abel, the nicest man in IndyCar, over in number 18 for Era Motorsport. You've got Pietro Fittipaldi for Pratt Miller in the 73, the man who has been the B-pillar king around this track for the last couple of years, in the number 99 for AO Racing, Christian Rasmussen, who Cam is still mad at. Mr. Excitement and Cam still can't get over Milwaukee for. And Nolan Siegel in the 343 for Inter Europol as well. We've got an LF1 driver. Logan Sargeant is over here making the journey again in the number 18, a car alongside Abel. And of course, we'll also be seeing him in the Ford Hypercar program very soon. It was announced this past week that Cam, I'm going to give you 90 seconds of free time here to talk about how mad you were when it was announced that Logan Sargeant was joining this team.
Oh, and not for the reason the you release? Think. Is yes. this about the press release or is this about Dax Shepard's, like, incredibly cringe delivery throughout hosting that entire thing?
No,
I don't care about Dax Shepard's delivery. I have a problem with the fact that this press release described Logan Sargeant as following in the footsteps of Dan Gurney and AJ Foyt in doing the F1 to Ford sports car project ladder. That is one of the most disrespectful statements in the history of motorsport media. Get the fuck out of here.
That was okay. We know it's like as a literal fact it's true, but it is a little bit shameless to make that comparison. And this is no disrespect to Logan Sargeant. He is not Dan Gurney, and that's okay. Yeah. There's no shame in not people, being Dan
there's
Gurney
only one
or
Dan
AJ
Gurney
Foyt.
And there's one AJ Foyt. It's a good opportunity for Logan Sargeant to start fresh, picking up on some of the names we'll recognize from Formula E, Antonio Felix da Costa in the 43 of Europol car, and new championship leader Nick Cassidy in the 343 with Nolan Siegel.
Citroën's finest.
Yes, absolutely. And a few of contemporary WEC hypercar drivers, Mikkel Jensen for United Auto Sports number 2, Malte Jakobsen for CrowdStrike and APR, Sebastian Bourdais, the ageless legend for Tower Motorsports, Charles Malacy for TDS Racing, Ferdinand Habsburg for Era Motorsport. Damn, they're getting a lot of playtime here. Valderesta for United Auto Sports, defending champions of this race, Harry Tinknell, and the number 52, Brian Herta Autosport with PR1 Mathiasen Motorsport. It's catchy. And Nicholas Nielsen, the mod winner from 2 years ago for AF Corsa in a one-off entry. I keep overthinking this race, right? Because there is an element of your bronze driver is important, but they're only so important as, like, right, don't bend off the car in the 4 or so hours that you drive. And then as the race progresses, because of the number of full course yellows you're inevitably going to see, that resets the field and it ends up playing in the hands of the pro drivers, the super silvers, if you will.
And the more cautions you get, typically, the easier that makes that job, because you never quite know how many you're going to get once you get to Daytona itself. As mentioned last year, we had a lot of attrition, a lot of yellow, a lot of cautions, and that makes it a bit easier to manage your bronze, so to speak, in this case. Who needs Ben Keating anyway?
I'm curious, RJ, what is the weather forecast for this weekend local to you?
I've heard rumblings. It's Florida weather. It can always change on a dime.
Right.
If I come back and check this forecast Friday, I may still not be correct. But it did rain a little bit during the final day of preliminary testing. We had 3 days of testing during the yawn before the Big John, as I call it. The roar before the 24 is what it's actually called.
Right. Because, I mean, we've already seen in the secondary IMSA category that weather can change a whole lot, including both leaders binning it, some of them more than others, in the final 15 minutes of that event.
Not great. Not ideal.
Because, really, that is where, you know, we've seen over the past 25 years, all you need to do is throw just a little bit of rain in around Daytona, and suddenly those cautions come a-flowing.
Indeed. Looking like it's going to stay modest and dry this time around, so probably not going to have that happen. But hey, who knows? The attrition game of roulette is always a tricky one out there. Especially
watch this space, though. Watch this space. If it inevitably turns out to be a rain fest, you can listen to it back and point it, laugh at us about how bad we are. So there's a couple of teams that really stand out to me. AO Racing has to be at the top. They didn't win Daytona. They really, really should have. They had a very unfortunate mechanical issue with 90 minutes left when they were dominating that race. They then go on to win the IMSA LMP2 championship. They win Le Mans. And with PJ Hyatt being the best bronze in IMSA LMP2 right now, with Dane Cameron coming off his fifth championship since unification, with Johnny Edgar, I don't know how he kept his silver status, but that's great for them. And Christian Rasmussen, every time he breathes the carbon fiber infused air of an Orica 07, it's like he turns into prime TK. It's like he turns into prime TK. There's no real weaknesses in this lineup. It's just a matter of, will the car last 24 hours? Will they get swept up in an accident of somebody else's making or their own?
Well, the good news is this year, the car is going to be a little bit lighter because Spike has shed his scales and is now gold and purple. Looks fantastic.
Oh, yes, my God, it does.
Gold Spike, desolation of sports cars. If you like your Hobbit movies, you'll appreciate that reference. I think they're the favorites going into this. I mentioned before, Christian Rasmussen, don't let his IndyCar results fool you if you're more of an IndyCar listener. He has been arguably the fastest man here in this class for the last 2 years now. He is a weapon around here in that car. Unbelievably quick. Quicker than anybody here. So, they're annoyingly probably going to be my pick for LMP2 because I just think they're the best all-round team out there, really. It's a really, really strong lineup, it's hard to go against them.
It's tough because there's so many good choices. I mean, United Autosports has brought two cars that, if all goes well, they could easily finish 1-2. They rebuilt the entire number two lineup and brought in Mikkel Jensen, now of McLaren. Hunter McElroy, which we didn't mention as a recent IndyCar alumni, but one start counts, and he's a weapon. Ben Hamley's been driving LMP2 cars now for what seems like 47 years. So that's a strong crew. TDS Racing has Charles Malacy and Matthias Besch, but I really need to see more out of Toby Lutka if I'm going to trust that team's going to be getting to the end the last couple hours, because that team's already been unlucky, and I don't like what I've seen so far. Inter-Europol competition, such a strong core of drivers with Dillman, DaCosta in the 43 car. Jeremy Clark is an underrated bronze driver. And the 343, like, there's something there with Nick Cassidy and Nolan Siegel. And I know Nolan Siegel's IndyCar career has not gone great. He's
going to
be just fine in an LMP2 car, especially with Cassidy alongside.
Yeah, Cassidy's as fast as anybody in a tin top right now. That boy's on fire. Has been in Formula E. He's actually very close to becoming Formula E's all-time wins leader, which is another startling stat I saw the other day.
He's in the leader, team, by the way.
Yes, indeed. For those who keep half tabs on Formula E, he did win.
And one other thing as well, if you're looking for a dark horse, Pratt Miller Motorsport has two Fittipaldis, Pietro, we know, and is racing with his brother Enzo in the number 73 car. Another black and orange car in this race.
I like that team. Looking at the spotters guide, it is a sea of black and orange. It's weird how this is shaken out this year, where like Like, racing goes through trends. We went through our red, white, and black Formula E era. We've had our black and gold sprinkled in here and there. We're now back to the black and orange. It's in for 2026.
It's wonderful, baby. It's absolutely wonderful. they keep cribbing off my website's style. Dre, before we go, leave a LP2. Expectations on Logan Sargeant in his first role at 24. He's had some LMP2 experience. He's with the team that's won it twice, Era Motorsport, in the contemporary LMP2 era.
It's a good spot for him. It's a good experience lineup around him. Look, the F1 thing did not work out with Logan, but I saw enough of him in Formula 2 and Formula 3 up that European junior ladder, which we all know is no joke. That Logan Sargeant has got talent. There's no question about that, in my opinion, at least. You don't walk into Formula 2 as a rookie and finish top four in points. That's normally a good sign that you'll be a good racing driver somewhere. So I think he's in a good outfit. Expectations should be simple. Don't wreck the car. You know, mitigate as many mistakes as you can. There's going to be some. You're going to be in there for a good while. There's no getting around it. No one's expecting you to be perfect. Be as clean as you can. Be as consistent as you can. Try not to wreck the car. And let the speed come to you. And I think you'll be absolutely fine.
My thoughts exactly. Jumping over to GTD. GTD Vanilla, the oldest class that has continued in its current form since unification. 21 entries from 9 manufacturers. We got Aston Martin, BMW, Chevrolet, Ferrari, Ford, Lamborghini, Lexus, Mercedes, AMG, and Porsche. You can have no more than 2 top-of-the-line pro drivers, so either 1 platinum and 1 gold or 2 gold drivers, but you've got to have some silvers, maybe a bronze if you feel like it, if they're paying for it. To sum up what happened last year, a better finish than what you saw in the movie. Now, if you've seen the F1 movie, it starts with the Rolex 24 at Daytona. It starts with Sonny Hayes fighting for the GTD class lead and the win. I can tell you from my experience that the finish at the actual Rolex 24 in GTD was more entertaining than what you saw in the movie. What you saw in the movie was actually good. It's the best part of the movie. Call me biased, but it's true. Fun finish. Lots of hard yet respectful racing, which maybe didn't happen in the all pro category above it. A surprise winner in AWA, which is now 13 Autosport, the Canadian team that pulled somewhat of an upset victory to get the Corvette Z06 GT3R its first victory with a privateer team in IMSA. Dre, we don't have as many recognizable names, but there's still a few, including some big hitters.
Indeed. Again, a fleet of some of our favorites, IndyCar past and present. Callum Ilott in there, the number 120 car for Wright Motorsports, one of the most underappreciated drivers of the modern age in open wheel or in sports cars. I think the guy's very adept at both should be getting a bit of a higher profile. Our favorite IndyCar meme driver, Mr. If you need a 10th, he'll get you 6th. If you need a podium, he'll get you 6th. Marcus Ericsson is in the number 45 for Wayne Taylor Racing. Alongside famous Indy 500 pre-race crasher Scott McLaughlin, who's in the 36th for DXDT Racing. Romain Grosjean is back. He's in the 16th for Myers Riley as well. Good to see him. And the fastest rookie in Indy 500 history, Benjamin Peterson, is in the number 12 for Vasser Sullivan. Also a couple of familiar names from the WEC hypercar class. Yiyi Fei in the number 23 for Tirassi Competizione. And for of course, one of the fastest sports car drivers in the world, Antonio Fuoco, is here as well. Always a weapon in anything that's got 4 wheels, I'd argue.
Cam, why do I feel that we haven't mentioned the prohibitive favorite to win this class? Manti is here in the United States running Endurance Cup programs in both GT classes. I look at car number 912. This is the car sponsored by First Form. This is Ryan Hardrick, Richard Leitz, and Ricardo Pera, who basically put LMGT3 in Le Mans and the WEC season as a whole into a chokehold last year. And then they added Mora Schuring, who was only a part of Manti's win last year, the year before that at Le Mans, they've got a bronze driver, but Hardwick is fast for a bronze driver in this nominally pro-am category where he's usually matched up against super silvers that have pro aspirations. This is a really good team, but this category is so deep.
It's a very deep category. It's a very good team. We saw what Manti was able to do pretty much from the drop at LMGT3 and WEC. However, I do caution this is an updated 911 GT3. Now, normally you'd say, well, Cam, that should be a good thing, right? Well, the last time Porsche brought an updated GT3 to Daytona, IMSA handed them the air restrictor from the 1993 Eagle Toyota. It was not doing so good up on the banking. It was fine on the infield.
Not great on the banking. And they're not going to be the only manufacturer bringing the updates. I'd mentioned it in the GT Pro portion of our set list, but Ford's brought updates to its Mustang GT3. Ferrari's brought updates to the 296. So three new Evo kits, four cars. They did run at the November IMSA Shanksen test in November, which I was at, just to kind of, you know, set a barometer for this. The Fords look really good.
Not just aesthetically. We have a number 16 Ford dressed in black, white, and red. It is doing it for Biff.
Absolutely.
With Myers Riley Motorsport. And that's where Romain Grosjean is.
Yeah.
Felipe Fraga and Jensen Altman, a very solid team all around there.
Yeah. Altman, one of the Ford Racing juniors that was revealed the other day. Felipe Fraga's solid. Sheena Monk, one of two women in this field. I know we really miss the Iron Dames, but running for a sub-championship that basically allows the full-time bronzes in IMSA to try and compete for a golden ticket to Le Mans, that ought to be interesting. I mean, it's tough because, again, like LMP2, this is a race that ultimately boils down to, at the very end, which are the cars at the front that are plugged in their past as pro drivers.
I look at the 21 with AF Corsa. That is a really tremendously solid lineup. We know AF Corsa has a talent for this sort of thing. However, because IMSA takes so much caution anytime a car is updated, anytime there is an Evo package, I'm just concerned that we are going to get the dreaded BOP table and the new cars will be very cautiously equipped. In terms of weight and power.
IMSA tend to err very much on the side of caution when it comes to new car updates, and they tend to come down. I mean, at least from what I've seen from previous years, they tend to be like, we'll hit them hard early and then go from there, basically, because we don't want them to completely run riot over their flagship race.
Didn't see it so much with BMW last year, though, because Paul Miller had some strong cars. And as mentioned, the Mustang is an Evo package, and they look quick. I wonder if they're going to stay that quick for the rest of the race weekend. Also, the Mercedes look good. I mean, we haven't yet mentioned Windward Racing, who've won back-to-back IMSA championships. They won this race in 2024 with pretty much the same lineup of drivers they have. Russell Ward, Philip Ellis, Indy Dacia, Lucas Auer. They would have won it last year if they didn't have a broken throttle assembly, lost seven laps, and then gained all of them back to take the lead, only to lose it on pit lane penalties.
Oh,
yeah.
The
57 Windward Mercedes team, it feels like the definition of all reliable. This class has run through them lately. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't begrudge anyone for picking the 57 AMG team. And that, if nothing else, is a proven car as well. Speaking of proven cars, the ancient one is still here, even though we have seen its replacement.
Lexus is still here.
The Lexus RCF GT3, we have seen its replacement, but I got one more in me for the number 12 Vassar Sullivan Racing team.
Mm-hmm. What a car, what a team.
That's a team still that here. Is hungry to win the Rolex 24, because they came second in 2019.
They've come so close so many times.
And what a way to do it in the last Rolex 24, we presume, for this car. We know it's going to be the last Rolex 24 for the Lamborghini Huracan, because I've seen the Temerario GT3 run. Wayne Table Racing, unlikely we get the new car anytime this year. So this is the last full season for the Huracan. And yeah. That car was quick. That car was very quick at Daytona last year. But that 45 Lamborghini was just so unlucky, except at Mosport, where they were the luckiest car of them all in that class. I don't get it. If I can indulge you on my dark horse pick, some of you old heads might know that Magnus Racing has been a staple of IMSA throughout the 2010s. They have kind of scaled back things lately with John Potter taking to his business. He's the gentleman driver that owns the team. They feel quietly good about their chances of winning with Madison Snow joining the team from Paul Miller Racing and BMW.
Very solid driver.
Nikki Team with Spencer Pompelli, the elder statesman in the field. He's made 25 starts, including this one in the Rolex 24.
Crazy.
No drivers more experience. I wonder if there is one more Magnus Racing victory left at the Rolex 24.
They're not going to pick him for the win. I was going to pick him for the win, funnily enough. I was thinking 44. I really was. I like Nikki Tim a lot.
We are picking number 44 to win in 2026. You heard it here first, M101 conglomerates.
Wrong series.
You brought the wrong shirt, Dre.
Where?
There's so many good cars, though. Like we're inevitably going to miss them all because we got to skip for time here, but... Andy Blackmore, Spotter Guide, spotterguides.com for the full Spotter Guide for this race and the Michelin Pilot Challenge supports. Does wonderful work there with IMSA's blessing and the blessing of all the OEMs and partners to make it happen. It's a real toss-up. We're going to have a tough time picking winners out of this group. So let's go to GTD Pro. This is the actual all-pro category with 15 entries from 9 manufacturers. It's all the same manufacturers that I mentioned in GTD, but we take out Aston Martin because they have no representation in this class, and we bring back to IMSA WeatherTech McLaren into the mix. Talk about shortly. To talk about what happened last year in 5 words, Ford survived the others' head loss.
That is pretty much what happened. Never log off nominee, multiple players in the GTD Pro category from Daytona last year. And funny, we got a mirror image of it at the end of the year in WEC.
Yep.
As previously mentioned, Manti is here, and they are here with Grello, and they are here with... about as much of a young Porsche driver death lineup as you can bring these days that isn't in the big boy class in GTP.
I mean, what does it say? You have 2 of the most recent 3 DTM champions in the GT3 era in this car.
Guven, who, as we have seen, will do anything for a win, and I do mean anything.
To say nothing of Thomas Prining, who loves a surprise overtake. And they're trying to take a little bit of the thunder from Retsy and Deo Racing, who have completely rebuilt their lineup. It's not Lauren Heinrich anymore. He's gotten a promotion. Instead, Nick Tandy in Retsy.
After 24 hours.
We just saw him in a Porsche 963 a couple weeks ago. What are you doing here with Harry King and Alessio Piccarello in Retsy?
Well, if you listen to his own words, enjoying himself for the first time in a while because he really sounded very done with the 963. Well, he's back in his element because we have seen him commit crimes beyond understanding on pretty much every other manufacturer in GT
Beautiful
racing
crimes.
Over the last decade and a half. And well, hopefully Rexy's jaw stays on this year because that was a bit of a problem last time out.
Because I know like the big thing was like Corvette versus BMW at the end of GTD Pro last year, but there was other car-to-car contact. Like Rexy lost a chance to win arguably because it lost its front bumper at the end of the race. And
it got braces for Sebring.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. But through it all, Ford Racing, as it's now known, it's still run by Multimatic Motorsports. But they've changed the name of the team. They've also changed around the drivers a bit. It's still like the same group of guys. It's just that they're all in different places now. And Mike Rockefeller and Seb Priel, you'll see less of them in IMSA because they're getting ready for a WEC hypercar trajectory program in Europe, which ought to be fun.
Yep, you're going to be running a P2 this year in preparation for the Forica that will be running in the future. They stripped the red off the cars. I actually think the white and blue looks marvelous on the factory Fords.
Oh, it looks crispy. Good. You're going to get crispy. Sick of seeing it, but it does look good on these cars. Like there are
I do
so
like it a lot.
There's so many good lineups in GTD Pro, which is what you expect looking up and down this grid. But then I see like some interesting things like Mercedes AMG has three GTD Pro teams that are two of them have genuine bronze drivers and the other one has a young silver who is not really somebody that's going to be a professional, full-time professional driver anytime soon. So it's all a bit weird and it's led to Will Power.
It's about
figuring it out immediately with 75 Express, the fastest driver in testing. And look, even though these cars have driver assist, it's not easy to extract maximum pace out of them if you're not familiar with this background.
I love that it's basically an Australian super team out there with Kenny Habul, maybe not quite so super, but Will Power, Chaz Mostert, and then Maro Engel.
12-hour legend, Kenny Habul.
That's Will Power's best buddy from Australian Formula 3, man.
Yeah. And
it's an Aussie super team that they've already won the Ashes now. They're coming for the Daytona 24 as well.
Oh, that's going to be tough.
If you're going to have a non-Aussie in there, you could do a whole lot worse than Maro Engel, who, again, will do anything for a win.
Oh, yeah.
And is still just scintillatingly fast all these years later. Their other car as well, the 69.
It just doesn't hit the same these days, Cam. I don't know what to tell you.
It's still nice. It's still nice. Knock it off. You're older than me. Grow up. But Maxi Goetz, Jules Gounon, and Fabian Schiller alongside Anthony Bartoni. That's a really good car.
These are all really good cars.
It's livery as well.
We haven't yet talked about the Corvettes. Now, borrowing Marvin Kierkhofer from McLaren to be an endurance driver. Now, borrowing Nico Verone from Formula 2, they have Antonio Garcia, the ageless wonder, and Alexander Sims, who combined to win the GT Pro Championship last year. And it's time for this generation of Corvette Racing Works team to win the 24 hours of Daytona, I think. With either one of their cars, really, it doesn't matter. It's been 10 years since that famous finish that Oliver Gavin cannot help but remind Antonio Garcia about every time he sees him.
Every single time. Hey, remember that time I beat you over the line off the 24 hours of racing?
Exactly. Like, there's a funny story from, like, 10 years ago where Garcia was so sick of hearing about it. He's on a jog around Le Mans with Oliver Gavin, and then some guy in a van pulls up alongside them, stops, is like, "You Antonio Garcia, can you sign this picture of the finish of the 2016 Rolex 24 where you get beat?"
Oh, no.
Heartless.
He gave him the Charles Leclerc digital picture frame treatment. Oh, man.
This is where I come to cry. Cool.
Dre, you've got your boy James Hinchcliffe is here. He's with Pfaff Motorsports in the last race for the Lamborghini because we know the Huracan, this is the last Rolex 24, and for Pfaff Motorsport, it is the last race with the Huracan because they're going to launch the new Lamborghini Temerario GT3 at Sebring. But first, they got to get through this. Kyle Kirkwood is with Vassar Sullivan, the GT Pro entry, which has reunited Ben Barnicot and Jack Hawksworth. Golly, if they've got the tools, that's a scary lineup of drivers.
Absolutely.
Once again, piloting the Ancient One for what we think will be its last time round Daytona.
Three different recent Le Mans winner for Ferrari, James Calado and Miguel Molina for Triarsi Competizione, and Alessandro Pierguidi for Rizzi Competizione, which is back as its own entry, done technical support for Dragon Speed last season and doing a damn good job of it, I've got to say. And the most interesting subplot, what I like to call the Island of Misfit Toys and RLL Team McLaren.
What is that?
New manufacturer alliance. You have the team that BMW didn't want anymore, the manufacturer that a lot of these teams in the field couldn't wait to get rid of, and a bunch of drivers who, for various reasons, things didn't pan out, and only one of the four drivers in the field, this Rolex 24, has any substantial sports car racing experience, and that's McLaren factory GT driver Dean McDonald.
You know, all I'm saying is, I feel like every year, RJ, when there is a 720S GT3 in this race, what are we all waiting to do? We're all trying to call when the thing's going to blow up.
It's a shame because I think...
It's fast. Fast-ass car.
And RLL is not going into this partnership as a short-term dalliance. They want to make this something that'll work long-term, potentially thinking top class. We'll see. But this is going to be a really rocky start to this new partnership.
Dean McDonald, Nikita Johnson, Yuri Vips, and Max Esterson. Now, get me wrong, I liked Max Esterson when he was at Petit Le Mans last year. I thought he did a very solid job, all things considered. This is a bits and pieces lineup, as we cricket fans would say.
Slurry Vips. Is that the best part of this team?
I think it's McDonald. They even said by their own admission they're going to be leaning on him a lot, and he's not even like – and the best McLaren driver is not even driving a McLaren because Marvin Kierkhofer is in a Corvette. Only one Paul Miller racing BMW instead of two, but they've packed it with all the good BMW juniors of a few years ago.
Harper,
Bezza, DeFilippi, Verhagen, all good drivers. Well, that car is very much a proven quantity.
We'll be in the mix, no doubt about it. Oi.
Right.
Can we get into the big boys now?
I think it's time we get in the big boys. So after this musical interlude, we'll get to talk about GTP, each manufacturer, as we get into the main event of the Rolex 24. We have 11 GTP cars, and for the first time, we have an LMH spec car in the Rolex 24. It's the Aston Martin Valkyrie. It's finally here. You had to wait a bit for it to race at Daytona, but it's going to happen. It's the number 23 Aston Martin Thor Team Valkyrie, driven by Ross Gunn, Roman De Angelis, Alex Ribéras, and Marco Sorensen. And I got to say, Cam, it's more than just a pretty face and an excellent sound. It really exceeded the expectations we set for it in year one, right? Because this was a vaporware project. This project was dead a few years ago. It came back to our surprise. We weren't sure how to feel about it, but it did very well, particularly at the end of last year where they started to find performance. They got fifth at Fuji and WEC. They got second, their first podium at Petit Le Mans to close out the IMSA season. I mean,
could do a lot worse.
You could do a lot worse. Shout outs to the Lamborghini SC63 program. It felt like we hardly
to a real one.
Knew you. So like the Lamborghini, they did the launch at Sebring to make sure everything was good to go for all the rest of the season. And then they showed up at Daytona late. This is the only factory car that has been updated for 2026 because the Heart of Racing team, THOR, get it, Aston Martin Thor team, Valkyrie, it's good, it's good. They've just decided we can find more performance out of what we got, and all of our drivers that we have in this car
as well.
Yeah, it's a new car. It's underbaked. When it first showed up, it got better as the season went on. All the GT drivers they have perform well. It's a good pipeline that they have bringing GT drivers up into prototypes, this specific breed of prototypes, and they're doing well. But it's been a weird build up to their first Rolex 24.
Am I right in saying they've already had to put their race engine in the car after testing Niggles?
That's right. So what happened was they had an electrical issue, and the only way they could resolve the specific issue that they had was to take the entire rear of the car out and then put in the race engine a day earlier than they wanted.
Not ideal, because, I mean, I feel like this is the most obvious statement in the world, but there are very few torture tests of a powertrain like the Daytona 24 Hours, because you are on throttle the overwhelming majority of the lap. And not only that, you're also up on the banking with the oil sloshed over to one side and all the load going through the right rear of the car. So it's like a perfect storm of powertrain hurting elements. I would want as few hours on my race, basically rear half of the car, as I could possibly get.
Yeah, and it wasn't the first time that this happened, because I was at the November IMSA sanction test, and they lost an entire day of that with a similar issue. Their first time ever testing the car in Daytona, like more than a year and a half back, didn't go all that great. So I'm worried, but I'm also like, but they finished Sebring first time of asking, and that race is hard, arguably tougher despite being half as long, and they finished Le Mans with both cars. It wasn't a perfect Sebring, and it wasn't a perfect first time at Le Mans, but they got to the flag, which is a lot better than what you could say about some first-year projects.
Absolutely. If there is a good element of it, that big screaming V12 is fairly under stressed in one of these cars because of the nature of these rules. So
right, it sounds so good, man.
A beautiful thing. It's a beautiful engine. It really. I know we keep talking about it, and I know it's almost become cliche to talk about it, but it is a beautiful sounding engine. It is wonderful to listen to.
Dre, if you were to put, What are your expectations if you're Aston Martin going into this race?
Annoyingly, it kind of has to be a little bit higher than what you would normally say, because normally you would say, hey, first time runner, first time at this race, just finish. Finish, try to just execute as clean a race as you can. But the problem is, this is a good team. This is a good team with proven quality. And I watched a large amount of Petit Le Mans this year, and this was a team that was that spent most of the race within 20 seconds of the lead, pretty much all the way through. Not the outright quickest car, but competitive enough where it was in the top three, top four, pretty much the whole way. It goes to show you that they can race on American soil, and there is speed in this car, and Ross Gunn drove a hell of a race. A particular one. I think he was exceptional for Aston Martin. So, really, the only thing that's stopping me from saying they should be thinking about a top five finish is these reliability niggles and the first time they're running it in this spec. And they've already had hurdles when it comes to trying to overcome that so far.
Yeah.
They've got to iron those out. Thankfully, as Cam says, the engine's not as big a problem, given it's a V12 round here on this spec, even though they've had to go to it a little bit earlier than they would have liked. But I think this is a good team, and I think it should be thinking about being genuinely competitive towards the front. Maybe not necessarily winning it, but if they were able to bring home another top six or top five finish, I think they'd be very happy with that for a first run.
For sure.
I will tell you, in testing, because we've got the chart of general lap times, they were by a... Now, I'm sure that not all the hands were shown at the roar before the 24, but on long run pace, they were a bit off pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of that was them trying to protect that engine. We'll have to wait and see.
There are some realities that I see. I see a reality where this team grits its way out to a top six finish. I see a reality in which this team gets its heart broken and potentially doesn't finish the race. There is no reality where this goes as badly as it did for Lamborghini the first year and the only year that the SC63 won that
Do
race.
Do not put that out there. Do not put that out
saying,
there.
I'm just saying. It's a credit to how...
24 laps.
It's a credit to the continuity and the cohesion of the Gabe Newell run Aston Martin Thor team. I know it's I know it's Ian James that runs the team on the sporting side. Gabe Newell just provides the money. But would you have ever thought 10 to 15 years ago that Gabe Newell would be one of the most important people in sports car racing?
Get Half-Life 3 out, for God's sake.
All right. Next up, fourth in last year's Manufacturers Championship is BMW, but it's not BMW as you've known it for the last few years. In fact, for the last 18 years in IMSA, because making its biggest American sports car racing change, they have replaced Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing with WRT. If you're not familiar with GT Racing or WEC, WRT is basically the greatest dynasty in modern GT racing. They've won championships in LMP2. They already ran the BMW M Hybrid V8 in WEC the last couple of years. And now they're going to run it in IMSA 2, setting up shop near Charlotte in the town of Kannapolis, doing it for Dale in the Haas F1 team building.
As you do. We're all friends here. It's a small world in motorsport.
Yep. And what we are getting into now is, well, every other car on this grid having a pretty substantial update. And this car has shrunk its sniffers substantially. Gone is the mega nose BMW and replaced with something. The kidney girls are still kind of massive, but not as massive as they were last year. But generalized aero update, they've spent some of their Joker tokens. And... I mean, the joke was last year that, well, really, it was WRT and RLL clothes because they looked great at Daytona last year. They got the pole, scorching speed over a single lap, scorching short run speed. But the ultimate flaw with this car last year was that it just could not keep its tires under it. And second half of the first stint and through the second stint, Porsche was beating their ass like a Cherokee drum.
So if
the update is to solve anything, it is to try and make this, again, a more raceable car. The speed has been there.
Always.
Really, since late in its first year, the speed is there. It now needs to become a better race car.
Which is
as well, this team also... you would think would be a little bit better operationally than RLL were last year, because the execution is ultimately where their race fell apart with that eventual nose failure and ending of their shot at the win.
It's interesting because I actually had a chat with Bernard Demmer, who is running both the WRT hypercar programs in IMSA and WEC, and he's keeping things relatively honest. Like, this is a fairly new crew. Like, they got some people from BMW, WRT, over in Europe. They got a couple of RLL people. Otherwise, it's a lot of new people coming in from places all around the industry, including rival manufacturers. It's a team of what should be 44 people. They're about five short at the moment, and it's still all kind of coming together. They're not expecting to be the WRT that we all know and love and respect and sometimes revile right out of the box.
I will tell you, the driver lineups in both cars are an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. Super strong.
And Trey, it's shuffled a bit, right? Because it's all the same eight drivers they had last year at the Rolex 24, all eight BMW hypercar drivers in total, but they've moved around a bit. So Dries Vanthoor in the 24 now has Sheldon van der Linde, Robin Frins, and Rene Rast with him. Marco Wittmann now has Philip Eng, Kevin Magnussen, and Raffaele Marcello with him. So basically, Vanthoor and Wittmann stayed in their cars. Everybody else flipped.
Interesting. I'm not sure what the logic was behind that shuffle. Maybe they feel like they can optimize their lineups by shuffling some talent around. You don't need me to tell you, if you're a long-time listener to this show, Rene Rast is unbelievably quick. Robin Frins was one of Formula E's elite for a good while. Dries Vanthoor at his best, I think, is the fastest man
last year in this race.
Dries Vanthoor was ridiculous last year in terms of just, I think when he is on full song, he is the fastest man in sports cars. And the ceiling is immensely high with him. It's just not quite worked out for him when it's mattered most. And again, the 25 lineup for their Peng, Marco Wittmann, Kevin Magnussen, who's adapted to sports cars pretty well, I would argue, and Rafael Marchiello has been quick in anything with everything. Four wheels for a decade now.
If he can fit in that car, he is fast as hell.
Yeah, he's a big boy, but he's very, very quick. And yeah, as Cam quite alluded to, this is a superb fleet of eight drivers. You can't really go wrong with this.
There's so much expectation on the 24 car because it's Vanderlinde and Vanthor for the full season. And when you put those together, like, that's a front runner for a championship.
It should be.
Yeah. We got to see. Well, we saw it pretty much the initial version of what GTP was last year, which is BMW gets the pole and then Porsche beats them in the race every weekend until the major BOP reshuffle midseason. As I mentioned earlier, the BMW is a very, very fast racing car. What it needs to be is a better race car now. They have to be, especially that second stint on the tires with the new tires this year, of having a little bit of a better warm-up phase, but maybe a little bit less peak performance. More than ever, you need to be able to use that second stint and maintain lap time on it. And that is where the BMW still was a quick car, just it could not maintain itself over those double stints at Daytona.
I wonder, there is something here. It's been 50 years, I believe, since the first BMW win at the Daytona 24 Hours in 1976. I think there could be some good symmetry, but it is a loaded field because now we got to talk about the updated Cadillac V-Series Rs. Three of them from two teams. One Cadillac is the ethos of this manufacturer. That was what they said in theory and maybe in practice, but not so much in results. Because here's the thing. The number 31 Cadillac wheeling car, which of course is Action Express Racing, they closed the year strong, winning back-to-back races to end the 2025 season. Jack Aitken was series runner-up. Then you look at Cadillac Wayne Taylor Racing, who for the second time in 3 years went winless, and doubly so with two cars.
Yeah, I mean, when you see Wayne Taylor Racing, and you know, we saw them have tremendous speed with Acura 2 years ago, even if it did not always reflect in the results. Last year was poor by any stretch. Yeah. Not even going to get into Le Mans, where they frankly look like a bunch of amateurs out there. But for the historic GM sports car racing team that Wayne Taylor in one form or another has been, this must be a redemption year for them. They don't have a choice.
Absolutely.
And what the tool that they will have to go after that is probably the most changed car. The Cadillac is more or less new front to back in detail.
I was shocked when I first saw that new aero kit. I was like, oh, hang on, that's different.
I was shocked. I saw it come off the truck and I didn't even notice all that was going on with it. So it looks like they cut all the drag out of it. They have a new front splitter. They took all the dive planes off. You don't really need them. They get knocked off in car-to-car combat. They drop the rear wing down low, but that's now the adjustable element of the car because you can only have one at the front or the rear. They chose the rear now. They feel like that gives them more to play with. They've also updated the brake system. It's Brembo all around after being some Brembo and some AP. Bottom line, expectations are high. They look good in the roar for not just one, but all three of the cars.
Everything about this update package tells me GM's going, we got to get drag off this car. Because what is the one thing that they have been very clearly lacking the whole GTP era? Top speed.
Top speed.
Yeah.
Because that car, over a lap, it is not a problem. Last year at Le Mans, Jota got the thing on pole.
Uh-huh.
Julian Andlauer went by that thing like it blew its engine going down the Mulsanne, and we never saw it again.
They were giving them like 5 miles an hour in the speed traps at Le Mans.
It's what you always expect from a big V8 powered American car is for it to be deficient in speed. Hopefully they fix it. But Trey, I mean, we got to talk about the human element of this a bit because Action Express, Jack Aitken, Earl Bamber, Fred Vesti. These are the same three drivers that close out the year with back-to-back wins. Earl Bamber can emulate Nick Tandy's Tandy Slam if he wins this race. Yes. Jack Aitken has come along well. Yes. Frederick Vesti has exceeded expectations. Yes. But that's not who a lot of people are here to see in the red caddy.
What we've there got, my friends, is the three Top Gear wise men staring at the cradle of the baby Stig.
The baby
Connor
Stig.
Zilich.
Connor Zilich is here in the number 31, the Motorsport 101 2025 Rookie of the Year, a highly prestigious honor, I'll have you know. And in depending on who you ask, the best man in NASCAR Xfinity Series in 2025. 9 wins across that season, arguably the most talented prospect in North America. And we've seen him before. He's been superb in LMP2 here in 4. Now he's in the big boy class. I'm very excited to see what this man can do. He is a sensational talent, and he's in very good hands with the people around him in that Cadillac setup. Yep. Just go out there and cook, young man. He's probably not going to get a huge amount of seat time because the youngster, the new guy, often doesn't. But just wrong.
So sure, given really? How good he was in his P2. Like, anything you plug Connor Zilich into, any track layout, any permutations, he's just fast as hell.
Oh, my God.
He's incredibly quick.
This is the biggest test, though, because this is such a complex car compared to an LMP2 or the Corvette that he drove last year or his Cup car.
Well, certainly compared to anything over in NASCAR. Action Express as well. Kind of just the old reliable of IMSA every year. They are just wearing down the knuckles on those gloves. I do wonder, because we talk about how the Cadillac has been weak on the long straights. It's also been devastating on the infield because you've got that instant torque up out of the turns from that big V8. I wonder if they can find a good middle ground with this new package where you're still going to have the advantage of the torque. You're still going to have the power band of that engine, but now you've got some drag off the car.
It's interesting to think about it. The Wayne Taylor cars, Ricky Taylor, Felipe Albuquerque, and Will Stevens in the blue number 10, Jordan Taylor, Louis Delatraz, and Colton Herta, borrowed from Cadillac's F1 team, in the black number 40. They don't get to borrow McLaren's Brendan Hartley and Kamui Kobayashi this year.
Yep, no Kamui batshit overtakes in the night to impress friend of the show, Tony Smith. I personally am devastated because Kamui Kobayashi, when he breathes the air at Daytona Beach, he turns into Dale Earnhardt in every race but the 500. And that one time at the 500. Both still really good driver lineups. The question with WTR as opposed to WRT is just speed. They were just slow last year.
Yeah.
And when you're that far off the pace, kind of in all conditions, it's just hard to fight. It does not help if you do not have raw lap time in the Cadillac as well, and going off the previous car, it is hard to fight with because it is hard to pass other cars.
Experience has to mean something, speed. Though. I mean, Taylor brothers have started 19 of these in a row, which is crazy because they're still very young men. Felipe Albuquerque has won this twice. So both the Taylors, I mean, that's got to count for something. It was interesting that Ricky Taylor said, you know, I don't trust it until we know for sure that we've got a quick package, which tells you about how last season went. Louis Delatraz, we know we've seen better. We didn't see it all last year, except when he was driving Spike in a different car in a different series.
That's my thing. When he wasn't in the Wayne Taylor cars, he was still quick.
Yeah. It didn't work in the WTR package. We are talking about a former Sebring winner here. Mm-hmm. We've seen what this man can do at the very best of his game, and he's exceptional when he can be in the right setup. But
Gotta be better than last year, right?
And well, Steven, It's got to be. And we've got to see what Colton Herta brings to the table in the number 40 as well. It's,
just don't crash the fucking car, Colton. I feel like every year I pick you here at this race in a P2, and every year he goes off.
Well, it is his first time driving the Cadillac. Remember, he drove the Acura before. Did he drive the BMW in 2023?
He tested it. I don't think he raced it.
Yeah. So this is something a bit different and a bit of a deviation because Colton's going to do the big three enduros in between his Formula 2 schedule and F1 commitments. I'm looking forward to see how Cadillac bounces back because to me, this looks like a favorite to win the race. But then I got to consider Acura, which hasn't really shown its hand yet at Daytona. It might just be troubles. Something might be up, but I mean, it's as if they never left Acura Meyer-Shank Racing. They finished second in the manufacturer standings. Both the 60 and the 93 cars won a race. The updates to the ARS 06, very subtle. Very subtle,
less visible, but still there, mainly concerning the underside of the nose of the car, which is where the Orica architecture cars make their downforce. More so, I would say, differently than most of the other cars here, and a little bit under the rear of the car as well. Unfortunately, the biggest update I see here is the 60 car is a fucking Bitcoin livery.
The
big 26. Come on, why would you like, do Scott Dixon like that?
It's like black and orange. It's a Bitcoin car. Fuck. Todd
just moved the money from one account to the other. Man, I don't know what to tell you. I mean,
I thought that was quite difficult to do with Bitcoin.
Just ask Mr. Hardy.
The 60 car. No car has more Rolex 24 experience in it than this one. You're talking Sir Scott Dixon, 23 consecutive starts.
He's been knighted in his home country of New Zealand.
Three overall wins in this event. Nobody's got more. Colin Braun has started this race 22 consecutive times, going back to when he was a teenager. AJ Allmendinger from the NASCAR Cup Series, returning the race that he won in 2012. It's his 16th start. Tom Blomqvist is the relative rookie, but he's never finished worse than second.
Relative rookie, but also one of the fastest dudes here. We've seen him battle and win here in years past. He's always, for some reason, somehow, whenever Tom's involved, there is going to be late drama and there will be beef at the end of this race. Impressive. That's what Tom Blomqvist does.
It's all impressive. But Cam, no car has more experience in it than the 60. But only the 93, which thankfully has a respectable petrol sponsor for a change.
Oil company.
Only the 93 has Alex Palou and Ranger Van Der Zande.
Spaniard is and back Mick Yeoley, in a sports car.
And Kakuno Shinoda. God, that's a really good lineup of drivers. And thing is right, we know Palou's good. Driver of the year. Ranger Van Der Zande and Mick Yeoley were such a good combo last year. And the few times that Oda got into a car after Daytona, he picked it up real, real fast.
Yeah, it took a little bit. It took a little bit for him to get to grips with the GTP. When he did, he was scorching quick. As mentioned, Alex Palou might be just the best racing driver on this planet or any other planet. And every time he has been in a GTP car, whether it be a Cadillac or an Acura, he has been stupid fast.
Was top 10 on the B pillar in both this race last year and the limited time he did run, and at Le Mans when he made his debut there in 2024.
Yeah, you just put him in a car and he just gets to work. He's so fucking good at this.
It's ridiculous.
Also, what amounts to more or less the Honda factory car here, as it is engineered by HRC.
Yep.
And this car did not really get to show much at Daytona last year because, of course, the left rear suspension collapsed very early in the race, and they were fast. They did have raw lap time in hand to fight with the eventual protagonist for the win, but when you end up in that hole, there's really no way of coming back from it in the modern era of the Daytona 24.
Absolutely. So
this car was compromised reliability-wise at Daytona last year, which is kind of wild given it wasn't the first year. We'll have to wait and see on that. The drivers will not be the problem here.
Oh, the drivers are not going to be the problem. I actually had a chat. I was fortunate enough to have coffee with David Salters back in November for the sanction test. He feels really good about where things are going with this team. Operationally, because let's remember, they were away for a year. Don't have to get in why, but they were away for a year. They come back, they expanded. And operationally, they weren't all there. That was one of the big things that they identified.
You can actually watch it. They put out a whole documentary on YouTube, and it did take them about half a year to get there operationally, really back to their best, and probably a little longer for the 93 team, given, again, that's more or less the HRC engineer training team. Mm-hmm. They are a new team. So, second year, updated Acura. We know the quality of this car. We know that it can win at Daytona when you just mess with the tire pressure sensors a little bit.
That finished second last year.
It did.
I think there's something here. God, there's so many good entries, and we haven't even gotten to the manufacturer that's won this race back-to-back years. Porsche, the 963. Porsche Penske Motorsport is back.
Kevin Estra bullshit has made it stateside to stay.
Yeah.
God help us all.
This is the buried lead, because as we know in the offseason, IMSA is now the exclusive domain for the two-time and defending GTB champion team, Porsche Penske Motorsport, and the manufacturer after its exit from the hypercar class. They've consolidated the PPM driver lineup as a result. Nick Tandy's no longer here. Matt Campbell's part-time. Lawrence Vanthoor, Kevin Estra back in America full-time for the first time in a while. Julian Anlauer's here. Lauren Heinrich got a promotion. The only one that's full-time that's left from last year is Felipe Nasr, because Jaminet's gone. As I mentioned, Campbell's part-time. And Tandy's now with Renzi.
Felipe Nasr, who has been all-reliable at Daytona for years.
He could three-peat. Again,
he could three-peat. Updated 963 this year. Again, I feel it goes without saying, it doesn't feel like the Wexit was about the money.
It really doesn't.
Given this is also pretty much all new nose on the car, new splitter on the car, new diffuser, new engine cover. Most of the mechanical bits, which have been doing their thing for the last couple of years, are the same. But this is now a consolidated IMSA-only Porsche Penske team. It feels kind of weird.
It does feel kind of weird. Like, a lot of the optics around this have just been really, really messy, to say the least. Don't get me wrong. This is still my favorite team to win the Rolex 24 Hours, because they have pulled from all the strengths of the WEC program out of necessity in terms of forming their driver lineup, and they've gotten better, which is a strange thing to say for a team that no longer has Matthew Jaminet and no longer has Nick Tandy.
Yeah, I am extremely excited to see what Lauren Heinrich does in a prototype. I have been singing his praises since he first got over here in IMSA.
Oh, me too, man. Oh, man. Heavily glazed Lauren Heinrich on this podcast.
Julian Anlauer was electric last year at Le Mans.
And Spa.
That man through Eau Rouge, only man who's faster than him through Eau Rouge is Kimi Raikkonen.
Oh my God. So here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. We have the two factory Porsches, of course. Remember, it's Porsche's 60th anniversary and the 75th anniversary of Porsche Motorsport in North America, I believe.
Motorsport North America, because technically, like, the first Porsche road car was raced before it was actually on a road.
For sure. Then we have the last Porsche privateer left standing, JDC Miller Motorsport, a team that is keeping its 2025 spec car, has three young, presumably paying drivers with an average age of about 21 and an old car. And wouldn't it be funny if it actually beat the factory cars? Hear me out. It's been quick, at least over a single lap in testing. And JDC Miller has gridded out top six finishes at this event recently, the last 2 years in a row.
RJ, I'm going to tell you my simple answer. No. My complex answer is no in red. And the shame is, and actually, Gary Watkins penned a pretty good piece elsewhere. About the state of this.
Did he talk to you about the BOP, Cameron?
We have to talk about the BOP, Dre. He's a he was so very softly spoken and just bury you. But it's something I enjoy about the man. But they are the last privateer left, more or less anywhere outside of the theoretical hypercar class over an Asian Le Mans series. And they decided that the about six-figure Porsche upgrade package was not worth taking on because they don't even know if they're going to have the money to do the full season.
Oh, damn.
So, keeping costs contained where there are. I like Nico Pino. I think he's very solid.
He's been solid.
He's been very solid for that team. Vanderhelm, I feel like we kind of know what he is at this point. He probably won't crash the car, but he's not going to be that fast not crashing the car.
Kalen Frederick is entirely new to sports car racing. So the driver lineup's not ideal. And JDC Miller is in a tough spot now. But I have had my conversations with the folks involved. They do feel a little more optimistic than what's been being written about their situation. They are in a tough spot. Do not get it twisted. But this team has fought through all these years of IMSA competition before. They've won the prototype challenge class at the Rolex 24. They've finished on the overall podium in the DPI class. They're a team that, with very little, is doing about as much as it can. And I wonder, wouldn't it be funny if this old spec car is actually better suited than all these new updates that are built for a track that the Porsche 963 is not even going to get to race at?
I wouldn't be so sure in that regard. What I will say is I am a bit concerned that Porsche may have shown a little too much of their hand, because if you were watching the roar before the 24, chances are it was a Porsche 123 at the top of the timesheets.
Yeah, and you actually could watch the Rolex 24, the test sessions, because they surprised us by putting a couple of the sessions up on YouTube with Matt Yocum and Ryan Moraine anchoring it. It was great. They got 10,000 views for each. I know that's not like, you know, big time TV numbers, but that shows that like 10,000 people are interested in watching cars go around in circles.
Yeah, like, it's weird because past precedent would tell you, you know, Porsche's won the last two races this year, the last two runnings of this race. 2024 was a war from pretty much hour five and for the rest of the race. Hour five and six, they and the 31 locked in single combat and did not get away from one another. Last year was a lot more one-sided. As soon as the BMW's tires fell off, the Porsches would run away. All these cars are pretty heavily updated. Except the Aston.
They are operationally so sound, though. That's the thing. If I don't think they have the raw pace, I think operationally they've still got a shot. We'll see what happens if it turns out into a sprint finish. But operationally, that's how they get ahead in races like these.
And we saw a bit of that last year as well. Also in race pace, in, you know, long percentage stint time, Porsche had this field over a table for pretty much the whole test by a couple of tenths. I do expect there to be adjustments to rein that in. And we'll just have to wait and see how it shakes out.
Excellent. Dre, how many sets of predictions do we want to do? Do we want to do every class or just the top one?
Well, we traditionally have done every class for the last couple of years now, so you might as well keep rolling with that, even if it's a little bit of a lottery.
It's the best part. It's the best part of the show.
I was this close to getting the winner and LMP2 last year. I was like, no! I was 90 minutes away.
I swept that shit.
Entry list in front of you, folks. Who is going to start? Who is going to win the race in GTD? That's regular GTD. That's green side wings and wing mirrors GTD.
I'm going to be. I'm going to be fun here. I'm going to go for Unc Division. Give me the number 12.
The ancient one.
It's destiny. Lexus is going to bring this home. In its last attempt, it's going to come through with Vassar Sullivan. Give me the number 12, Lexus.
I think you might be blowing your load here a bit prematurely because there's another Vassar Sullivan Lexus in a different class. Cam, you've got four of your cars here in the field, but you're not feeling that confident. So if it's not one of them, or if it is one of them, who you got?
I will roll with Old Reliable in GTD. I'm gonna go with the 57 Windward Merc.
So now that means I've got to be a little bit more provocative. I've got to be a little bit zesty here. You know, there's one team I didn't talk about in GTD that a lot of people love that surprisingly has never even finished on the podium in its class in the Rolex 24. That is the villain of the scene from the movie. But I'll tell you, if Turner Motorsport wins GTD, that's going to be a very, very popular victory in this paddock and in that crowd.
You can see it.
That's why I'm picking them to win. All right, next up, GTD, the one with the red side mirrors, and it's GT Pro.
What do you reckon, Cam? I'll give you one.
It's a really damn loaded class.
Well, Trey, who do you think, Scott?
Give me the 21. I've got to root for a Ferrari somewhere. This is me we're talking about here.
Wait a minute. Pause. The 21's in GTD regular.
Oh, my bad. I read the wrong page on my spotter's guide there. See, the spotter's guide is not working for me. It's not working.
It's color-coded and everything.
There is a Ferrari in GTD Pro. It's Risi Competizione. It's got your guy Pierre Guidi there. I know there's hard feelings.
We don't speak. You bastard.
But I tell you, it would be 2 and 3 years for Risi Competizione at the Rolex.
It would be.
Daniel Serra and Davide Rigon are no pushovers either. I mean, those guys know a Ferrari GT car back to front.
I'm gonna go for the Mantai. 9-11.
You're going for a Mantai debut win in GTD
Pro.
Just because
I want to embrace a little bit of chaos.
This bitch. You fuck it. Why not? 9-11.
Which one?
9-11.
You're also Grillo. Going with Mantai. So now that leaves me with me. I think, as funny as it would be to see RLL do it, I don't think it will. As quick as Will Power's been, I just think 75 Express has been so unlucky. I can't trust them until now. I'm going with Old Reliable in the long-term sense. I'm going with Corvette Racing, and if I had to pick a car to do it,
Old Reliable.
I like the 3. Garcia
betting on
won
the 3 at a big event at Daytona. You never learned.
You bold motherfucker.
Trust me. You
better hope there's
me.
A lucky penny on that dash.
I think there is. I think Garcia and Sims were excellent, consistent all throughout last season. They add Kirchhofer, who won GTD in a Corvette last year. There is a lot to like about this car. I'm not one of these people that entirely disrespects the 4 car because it's not the 3 car in the Corvette, but I just like what I've seen so far. LMP2, we know it's a bit of a lottery, but we got to pick somebody, right?
I like the gold. Give me Spike. Give me the 99 AO Racing.
Oh, I'm gonna go for RJ's dark horse pick. Give me the 73.
You another Pratt Miller choice off the board.
I mean, it's not off the board. We can predict the same thing, you know.
Oh yeah, true. It's true, but it's true, but you know, I'm not gonna pick it because I think United goes back to back. I don't think it's the 22. I think it's the 2. If the 2 car ends up with anyone of Hanley, Jensen, or McIlroy in it at the end of the race, it's a wrap. And finally, GTP, your winner at the Rolex 24 Hours, Dre Harrison, will be.
Oh, boy. Tough call here.
It'll be easier than the athlete of the year. I assure you that much.
No shit, Sherlock.
When suddenly Mark Marquez.
A part of me, almost out of an apology, wants to root for the 93 purely because of Alex Palou. And even though it's got the 93 in it, which is just deeply conflicted in so many hilariously accidental ways. Give me the number 6.
Vantor, Astor, and Campbell is what Dre goes with. Cam, it feels like this is just a formality at this point.
Which one?
Funny, I'm between 3 cars here. And no, one of them is not yellow.
Oh, really?
No. Don't worry, it's not orange either. Fucking Fact Bitcoin no. livery.
I did actually ask somebody from Porsche if they had thought to change the numbers of the cars in light of recent events, and they said by the time they realized it, you know, it was already cresting the wave.
You know, I'm split between my love of Kevin Estra bullshit and my love of Lauren Heinrich bullshit. Because they're both just insane when they get behind the wheel of a Porsche.
May I make a suggestion? For the sake of competitive balance, you pick the 7 because it's the entertaining option here. Do you really want to match me on 2 out of 4 here? Just saying.
What they expect one of us in the wreckage.
Silence Bane.
Gotham is yours, Mr. Buckley.
Fine, give me the 7 Porsche Felipe Nasr 3-peat.
Oh no, he's only got to back the Nasr 3-peat. That brother's starving.
Well,
the Lauren Heinrich 1-peat means more.
Oh my god. Now it's on me, the guy who's going to be covering this full time for Racer and DSC this year. Ching, I know.
Chill. That's the point of this show. Chill. Go follow RJ's coverage. It'll be good.
I really think Wayne Taylor Racing turns it around over the course of this IMSA season. And I think Cadillac Racing wins the Rolex 24 at Daytona. But I don't think these two events happen in the same instance. Because I think, even if Connor Zilish is only given 2.5 hours on old tires to basically do what Button and Newgarden did a couple years ago, which I don't think will happen.
They'll give him more.
I think Earl Bamber completes his own Tandy Slam and emulates his friend from 2015. I think we see the true emergence of Jack Aitken as an ace within Cadillac Racing. And I think, whether you love him or loathe him, Cadillac Wheeland and Action Express win the Rolex 24 at Daytona. And I just realized we went through all 3 protagonists of the 2024 race, so come back in a bit when inevitably BMW or Acura wins this race.
It would be funny if we all just get this wrong, but honestly, I could see a world where the 31 wins it. That is not the 31 of a couple of years ago. That is a bona fide outfit now. No doubt about it.
Every hour of this race will be live for viewers in over 210 countries on the IMSA official YouTube channel. Unless you're in the United States, they have it on NBC and Peacock and IMSA Radio. You know where to watch.
Yeah, and I said, if you're outside of the United States, it is free on the IMSA YouTube channel. Absolutely, just subscribe to the IMSA Racing YouTube channel. It's accessible. Motorsport is great. There's a reason why they've got a gold badge. They thoroughly deserve it. Their coverage is outstanding. It's all available free on their YouTube page and imsaracing.com, their website as well. If you prefer to rather have your bandwidth on there than on YouTube, it is up to you. Thank you very much for listening, folks. We'll be back next week for a full review of the race itself, one of the best races of the year, the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. We'll be back then, and then after that, season preview season. My God, that came around fast this year, didn't it? Until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley, and until next time, thank you very much for listening. Catch you guys next week. Sayonara.